Well, boys, looks like you started the fun without me.
You're all sick. Every last one of you.
We're going to need a bigger gun.
What's the matter? You're scared of things that go boom, boom, boom.
Give me one goddamn reason why I shouldn't blow your goddamn brains all over that goddamn wall.
Help me get away from myself. My name is Eric, and your name is Michael. Our fucking studio is still falling apart here.
Breaking.
Right, do we need to do like a PBS, please donate, like pledge kind of thing?
The more you know.
People would not donate to this show, would they?
I would.
That is PBS that does that, right?
Actually, I don't donate to this show.
No, you don't.
You really have to work to get me to donate.
You're not donating to the show is why your microphone stand is broken.
That's what it is.
All right, well, let's put that out there. People could email us. Rather than asking for donations, I'm going to ask people to email us to tell us if they would donate before I like put myself out there. We have a fucking show today. Yeah. What is going on the show?
What is going on, I think, is a better question.
Yeah, it is.
But today we're doing Tank Girl and Schindler's List.
So this is actually happening. I think there are still people who didn't believe it.
I am one of those people. Like, and while we were watching the films, I was still one of those people.
Until it showed up in their iTunes right now. They were like, what is happening? We're going to spoil both of these films. The mere notion of that.
Anyone who hasn't seen Schindler's List, we're going to spoil it. And anybody who wants to see Tank Girl but hasn't, we're going to spoil it.
Yeah, you know, we should start saying, actually, like, this show doesn't really have spoilers. You could probably listen to both of these movies and be just fine, right?
Yeah.
It's not really going to ruin
anything. For the most part, like, we could just do, like, spoiler alerts right before.
Okay, if there's anything big.
Yeah.
There's also chapters. So I have a bunch of stuff that I need to like whine and moan about before we get into Tank Girl.
All right, can you bitch and moan instead since we're explicit?
I don't have the ability to do that. Only whine.
Okay.
You can use the chapters right now in iTunes, in on your iPod, whatever. Just drag down that little menu
that
there.
That way you don't need to listen to Eric bitch and moan or whine and moan.
So this is kind of like, this has been a joke up to this point and now it's really happening.
Mm-hmm.
I'm worried that this is kind of like, you remember high school, you had like your last week and you just fucking phoned everything in.
Yeah.
I'm kind of worried that's what this podcast is right now.
I feel like we have already done the work.
All right. You're right. You're right. At this point, you just have to show up to class and turn it in. All right. Let's make this the best show and not the worst show.
All right.
This is either going to be the best show or it's going to be like,
this is going to be that
12
paper.
Detectives.
This is going to be that
monkeys.
Paper I turned in senior year to my English class about serial killers.
I wanted to tell you about this adventure that I'm embarking on.
Okay.
Something that I'm doing for everyone else who doesn't know so that no one has to do it. So I work for this thing, awesomestart.com. I don't know if you're aware of that. And in the background of me, you know, typing away at my code, I need like bullshit to watch. And I decided that I've already watched every conceivably good TV show from now to Twin Peaks. So over like except for the X-Files, maybe over the last 20 years, maybe 30 years at this point. I have not seen Alias. So I decided that I'm going to download Alias and watch all of it. I'm like 6 episodes through and I'm already regretting this.
Yeah. Like, why would you do that?
So I'm just letting people know right now, if you never hear me mention Alias again, you know that that experiment failed.
Okay.
Otherwise I'll go on a giant rant next week about how wonderful Alias is.
So now are we going to jump from some person who's like forte is changing costumes to someone who randomly changes costumes?
Yeah, I think that's about right.
All right, let's do that.
We get into Tank Girl. Tank Girl is Jamie Hewlett and Alan Martin, who did the comic.
Tank Girl is Lori Petty.
Well, okay. So Jamie Hewlett, we know from
The Gorillas.
Yes. Which is something we're both really into. We've mentioned before
with a Z
on several Dennis Hopper podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
Really good stuff. I'm not a big fan of the Tank Girl comic. I know you haven't really seen it.
Nope.
It's really busy and it literally gives me a headache to look at the pages of it. I know some people are really into that stuff. I don't get it at all.
That's fine, I guess.
So we should let people know right away because I think we're going to have an overall negative impression of Tank Girl.
Everybody's going to disagree. So
I don't know if they are.
Really?
We'll see. We'll see
cult
what happens.
Cult film, man. We're tearing apart a cult film right
now.
Yeah,
that's probably true. Before we get into any of this, we paired this up with Schindler's List as a joke. Where should we have put Tank Girl?
Option one, I think Tank Girl should have fallen on the cutting room floor with Bossin' Up.
Okay. All right.
But just if we couldn't.
For those who don't follow along in mythology, Bossin' Up is a terrible fucking film you tried to get me to see that I refused to put on the show.
It is.
And probably led to the ending of what is now the very last of the I haven't seen, you haven't seen shows. So yeah, could have gone there. Yeah. But if we wanted to pair it up with one of your
films. There's really one answer.
What's that?
That's Big Trouble in Little China.
That's about right. It's a sand beetle.
It is a sand beetle.
I think that's exactly what this film is.
It's a sand beetle with a little sand beetle coming out of it.
Yeah. And that little sand beetle is Malcolm McDowell. You know, the other thing I should state in case I just forget at the end of the show, because I know I'm going to tear it apart. I find this to be much in the way that you do Big Trouble in Little China. I think that's a really good comparison. Because I think we would both agree that that's an insane, what the fuck, probably bad film that you love.
Yeah.
And that I don't want to get anywhere near. Tank Girl is a film that I would say, even to a larger degree, is an awful, awful piece of, I can't even call it a piece of art.
No.
It's just, it's terrible.
It's a piece of work.
And I love watching it. I don't know why. I can't explain it. Maybe through our conversation today, we'll figure it out.
I was like tearing my hair out.
Yeah, this was really homework. This really was a paper you had to write.
This was worse. Like,
I have never seen you so distraught, man. And you are a pro. You sat through Being John Malkovich, and I didn't even know you fucking despised that.
Yeah.
Thing. And you couldn't get through Tank Girl. Dude, you barely made it.
This was a mess.
Was it worse knowing that you had to do Schindler's List afterwards?
Well, no. See, here's the thing: as we walk out after Tank Girl, walk out after the whole you know, viewing thing,
right?
And I had to debate whether it was more of a pain in the ass to sit there hungry for 3 hours and watch Schindler's List,
right,
or to just sit for an hour and a half and have to watch Tank Girl.
Should we have ordered a pizza? Would that have fixed this entire dilemma?
I couldn't eat a pizza while watching Schindler's List.
So this is a movie where we have Lori Petty. I understand here, right?
You do?
I mean, I understand why she's cast here.
Okay. You're going to have to enlighten me.
Okay. Well,
I don't understand why Lori Petty has a job.
They wanted Emily Lloyd and she wouldn't shave her head.
I don't know who Emily Lloyd is.
Emily Lloyd is an actor who could have played the part of Tank Girl.
Okay.
Or Rebecca, who is what is apparently her name. Mm-hmm. You know, it's weird. They never actually say the names of the characters in here. It's really strange. So you have Lori Petty, who a lot of people really like. She seems to resemble the comic to me. I don't know. This is another thing where I'm one of the few people enjoys the film and not the comic. I think most people are vice versa on that. Naomi Watts, I kind of get a little bit.
Naomi Watts works. Naomi Watts with an Australian accent is where she should always be.
Yeah, she's fucking great. I mean, she's been great in so many things.
She has
Naomi
been.
Watts with dark hair and glasses is about, that's A+ for me.
Yeah,
that's
totally.
Really
I
good
agree.
Caliber. The other thing I don't understand in this is Malcolm McDowell. What the fuck is he doing in this movie?
You know, I don't know.
How do you get him?
I've seen Malcolm McDowell in
is he just not busy
tons and tons of films. I think he had a down period. Like that was when he was doing what was it? Paradise Island or
I don't know.
Something like that.
That's another one that I'm going to have to look up in order to tag the
show. On that TV show or something. I don't know. But I think he had a down period or maybe he thought it was a good career move appealing to a younger audience.
Maybe.
I don't know.
They tricked him into it.
Yeah.
This is like a Ron Paul,
he was robbed.
Sacha Baron Cohen kind of
he
thing
was
going on here.
Can we go back to Lori Petty? I didn't get to say anything.
Okay, please. Lori Petty.
Okay, so what I don't understand about Lori Petty being in this film is normally, I mean, and stop me and correct me if I'm wrong.
I don't
but
think
if you
be wrong.
Were a casting director and you were to cast, let's say, I don't know, the lead, maybe even title character of your film.
Right.
Wouldn't you get an actor?
Maybe
because Lori Petty doesn't act.
She's got some TV work.
She's
man.
A ditz. You know? She's just on screen being a ditz. And then they're like, good job, Tank Girl. And she's like, what?
I think that's what we want here. I think that's what's kind of,
you know, I think acting like a ditz would be more effective than just not knowing what was going on.
All right. See, this is a really hard line for me because one of the few things that Tank Girl really has going for it is this female empowerment feminism thing. And I honestly really do agree with you. And I hesitate saying that on the show because I feel like I'm not sticking up for the feminism like I'm supposed to be.
Yeah.
But she is really just she's annoying.
Yeah.
She really just is. And I think just because you have written in the part of a character that's a woman and also a leader and really outgoing and, you know,
her own character
right.
Independent.
Exactly. Yeah, she fucking
marches to her own drummer.
Exactly. There is independence just coming out of every orifice on this woman. And that just doesn't really radiate on screen as the kind
of... No, it
of,
just comes... I mean, she just with, comes out as her. It seems like she's dumb and she's not aware of what's going on.
Right.
It doesn't seem like, yeah, you know, I don't care. I'm lackadaisical, but I'm going to get the job done. It seems like, what? Wait, we're stopping something?
There's
who's
a lot
going...
Of-
where am I?
There's then, a lot of one-liners, too, that aren't working.
And they all fail.
I don't know if
zero nudity.
That's true. There is zero nudity in the film called Tank Girl. You do get a Cole Porter scene, which has some borderline nudity
in
it.
That infuriated me.
It's funny because you were about ready to... There's two points in this movie. one of which we won't get to yet.
Yeah.
Which I thought would be the game changer for you, because that is for most people. But the other thing that I forgot about was that there's a Cole Porter scene. Now, I did not know Cole Porter last time I saw Tinker Girl, but we have since done DeLovely, was that right? Yeah, we did DeLovely on the show, and I was schooled in the ways of Cole Porter. And if this film, you were ready to start throwing things at this point, but once it got to Cole Porter and they were like, it's like the South Park, they're raping him. That's what's going on here.
That's exactly.
So I don't know.
And it was a girl raping him, like the irony.
Yeah.
Like,
I think just that's one of the music is one of the weird elements that goes into this whole thing.
Well, they do it. They do the Joan Jett thing at the end.
Yeah.
But that arrangement was just some weird film arrangement.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's at the end. That's not the Cole Porter thing is literally them singing it.
Yeah, it's just an arrangement for the film.
Yeah.
It's a pain. It's just awful.
In my head, I hear like a punk rock cover rendition of it.
17
but that's not
from
really.
Repo. Yeah, with that's the lyrics to Let's Do It.
That's terrible. The music in this, though, I think is pretty great. You have
just
a lot of stuff.
Watch your step. Everything you say from here on out is just complimenting Courtney Love.
I know. This is not the first time I have complimented
Courtney Love
on this show.
She's done very little wrong.
Previously praised her for having colored hair and a short skirt in
The People versus Larry Flint.
People versus Larry Flint, which I have a feeling will come up again on this show.
Inkling.
You know, there's a lot of Bjork on here. The thing that I really like is that there's Portishead. I've discovered a great method if you have a piece of shit film and you need to deliver a powerful scene. Here's what you do. You leave the scene fully intact. You don't do anything visually to it. You don't act it any differently. In fact, you don't even need your actors in it. You just put Portishead on top of it. Yep. You put Portishead
That's
on
probably
top of
fair.
Any old shit. And it, what was that? The shower scene with the weird dust. They don't have any water.
Yeah.
Ongoing joke. And there's Portishead on top of it. And it feels like the most grounded, like the best scene in the entire thing.
Yep.
Just because of the music. The
and
power
it's
of fucking Portishead. It's weird because we also get that same kind of shower scene in Schindler's List.
Yeah.
But I get ahead of myself. So before we get to why this is a train wreck, because I think I have some idea. Yeah. I've done in much the way of Halloween 3.
Yeah.
I've done the background research now and I think I might know. I want to talk about the tank. How do you feel about this tank? Does this work for you? Because this is one of the things that in exploitation fashion, this is what the movie's writing on, so to speak.
Well, yeah. And in exploitation fashion, it just doesn't deliver it. It's a movie called Tank Girl, and you have half of that. You have a girl.
You get a little bit of tank. She finds a tank.
Most of the tank is done with animated panes.
Right.
And the rest of the tank, it's artificially intelligent, maybe actually intelligent.
Yeah, I don't know.
The tank
really
becomes
know.
A character.
Right.
And again, I haven't read the comic. I don't care because it's a tank and it's not a character.
Right.
And also like the way they trick the tank out, it makes it seem like they're like, hey, what if Pee-wee's Playhouse took place on a tank?
Right. Well, you instantly invoke the Road Warrior thing.
Yeah.
Which is what happens. And we've seen this in so many movies. Now, you finally saw a Road Warrior.
All three
of them.
This
was something I did, you know, a while ago when I was kind of curious about this stuff. And I think you'd agree with me. This isn't the Road Warrior podcast or anything, but Road Warrior has a lot of iconic imagery. That's about it.
Yep.
That's the summary of what comes from
Third film, I think, carries itself. I think that's about where I'd put that.
Okay. And we could have disagreements about that, but that's, you know, not the point here. The point is that so many things have stolen just different
chasing
pieces
the semi. Can we just call it chasing the semi?
That's fine.
Because that's what it is.
And we get a bit of that here. And I think that stuff is good. I like that. The problem for me with the tank, like the way they trick out the tank, I'm okay with that. It's not quite the way I would have done it.
Yeah.
But dude, you got a fucking barbecue grill on the tank. You could have done a lot of great stuff with that. If your job was just to decorate the tank, I think the person who decorated the tank, you know, in our ongoing theme of high school homework here, they pass. They pass the test. They get to go. They graduate. That's fine.
Okay.
What doesn't work for me is that you don't use the tank to really do anything.
Yeah, exactly.
The tank kind of chases around some trucks a little bit.
You ride on the tank. It shoots at stuff that you never see it hit.
Yeah.
And then like it runs out of ammo.
So what, did they run out of budget? What happened here? Why is the tank not blowing shit up left and right? There should be more explosions. I mean, we need you know, here's the thing. We could have gotten away with this entire film without being an action film, but it's fucking called Tank Girl.
Yeah.
Like, I do want to see the tank blow some shit up.
Right.
Instead of the tank blowing some shit up, we get Kangaroo Men.
Kangaroo Men.
Which are oddly not animated. Now, before we get into Kangaroo Men.
Okay, so let's just take a second here.
Right.
And let's just praise the fact that the Kangaroo Men aren't CG and they're not animated. Even though animated would have worked because then you have the Roger Rabbit element.
Well, the Kangaroo Men, well, I meant animated in the way that the film animated a bunch of sequences that they apparently forgot to shoot.
Yeah, totally.
And just put that stuff
in. The pains of like, oh, here's a really, this scene could be inventively shot and well executed, but instead right. we'll draw it and right. cut back to Lori Petty going, whoa!
Oh no, he figured out the formula for this film. We'll get back to the animated stuff because I think I know about that too. But right. we get actual kangaroo men. And I think that's...
Actual kangaroo men.
Actual kangaroo men.
From Borneo.
I think that's a mistake that they're not CG. I mean, I think it's not necessarily that CG would have been better. That's not what I'm trying to argue here. But I'm saying that they're not CG because they couldn't do them CG. Yeah. You know what I mean? They didn't even think that that would have been...
End statement.
We're at the point now where doing things with computer animation and computer graphics is cheaper than, you know, dressing up people like kangaroos for a lot of feasibility reasons. For instance, wiring, you know, why there's a lot of wires in this movie.
So many wires
edited out that I think are fantastic.
Yeah. Was intentional, but I don't think it was.
No, it's not intentional at all. Sometimes you want the self-aware thing, and this is part of the enjoyment for me is just going back and watching a movie that really just does pure shit.
Yep.
And really does have wires that weren't removed and camera shadowing and reflections.
Yeah.
I mean, we get so much of that now in films that kind of nod and wink to it. Sometimes I like to go back to the films that really do suck.
Well, I will only go back to films that really do suck if they came out before 1990.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just ashamed of society failing that badly while I'm part of it.
You get this. That's an excellent point. I might have to rethink that. You get this weird 90s kind of look to this thing, which really, I'm not sure what brings that. We kind of talked about that as we were watching it. I think we haven't seen something quite like that since we did 12 Monkeys on this show.
Yeah.
Where it looks like 90s sci-fi. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a really distinct look to that. However, to get back to the original thing, Kangaroo Men is not what adds that. And Kangaroo Men, the thing that really gets me about Kangaroo Men is that they are super soldiers.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
So you want to build the ultimate soldier. Now, this is something that's been done in more movies than have ripped off Road Warrior.
Uh-huh.
God, the fucking alliteration in that sentence was
wow, that was impressive.
Can we just take a second?
Good for
you. I'm really sorry. We have seen ultimate super soldier in so many films, but this film goes on to say the problem with all the other films, the reason their ultimate soldiers did not work, is they didn't try the brilliant move of infusing kangaroo DNA.
Right.
Now, if you want to look for like bad one-liners from films, I think this is, you know, if we were to like actually go through films we've done and pick out clips to use in our theme in much the way you wrote those lines so many weeks ago, the memories. I think the line about making super soldiers out of kangaroo DNA, you can't make that shit up.
They said
this. Or maybe
this,
you have to make that shit up.
They said this and like you stopped it and you're like, okay, let's get a rundown of what kangaroos have that soldiers need.
Right.
And the answers are like high jumping, a strong tail, and a pouch. And I'm pretty sure like two of those things are something that we can just artificially equip with our like normal soldiers.
Right. Well, that's one of
like a fanny pack and moon boots. And then we just need to, you know, surgically attach a tail, super soldiers.
Right.
Awesome.
One of the failings of this is the only thing they really use with the kangaroos is the jumping.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to try and make a joke out of it, have the kangaroos carry shit around in their pouches and whip people with their tails.
Yep.
I need a little bit more of that. So we have all the kangaroo stuff, the wires, the really bad jump cut scene in here.
Yeah.
See if you can find that on your DVD copy of this.
Clue, the watch thing, Naomi Watts.
The thing that I want to give the film credit for, because after all, this is a show about notable things in films. The one thing for my money that this film does absolutely marvelously is that Malcolm McDowell's character suffers an injury, let's say. That's my non-spoiler version here, an injury. And they lead you to believe that they like cut off his head and do something, which I guess it turns out they kind of actually do. He has a hologram head or whatever, but that's not important. The important thing is you're led to believe that they've given him some kind of crazy super
third face.
Yeah, right. Exactly. That he has some like insane face or something. So they shoot him where his face is obscured in like half of the shots leading up to the ending. And when you get the big reveal, it turns out that he just has his normal face.
Yep. And the camera was just ill-placed the other times.
Right. This is brilliant. And the more I think about it, the more I think this wasn't a joke. I think maybe they didn't have Malcolm McDowell for a lot of those scenes. That could be possible. Also, they could have fully intended to do something cool with his face and ran out of money.
Yeah.
As much as I want to give the film credit for this kind of joke, the way they play up the other jokes really seems like they're pointing at him. And yeah. This one doesn't seem like they...
Subtle. Super subtle.
Yeah. It's a lot more subtle.
And there's no subtlety in this film.
No, there really isn't.
There's no subtlety, but there is an Ice-T.
Ice-T plays one of the kangaroo
yeah,
people.
Yeah. What's it? What's... Do you have his name?
Ice...
Ripper? Or no, it's T-Star? T-Pain? E-Stain?
T-Saint.
T-Saint.
But let's go
Stain with just with us. T-Stain.
T-Stain is better. Let's stick with that. So okay. Rather than just reveal it, we've talked about this previously, and we have done now 52 fucking weeks of research on this topic. Mm-hmm. We've talked to countless people. By countless, I mean like six people.
Six whole people.
And they have given us their personal stories. Mm-hmm. Why don't you give me your hypothesis as to what happened with this film?
I have four words. What the fuck do I do?
Yeah.
Five words.
In the immortal words of Joel David Moore, what the fuck do I do? What the fuck does a producer do? And here they ruin the film.
Yeah, that's what they
quite
do.
Simply.
Answer,
I wish there was a better explanation, but what happened here is that Jamie Hewlett and company, I'm just going to keep crediting Jamie Hewlett.
It was six words.
Gorillas.
Yeah.
You're still counting the words to
Sorry.
That. That's awful. That's what post-production is for. That's where we go in and superimpose Malcolm McDowell's head into this podcast. They kind of auctioned off the rights. They made this film mostly without, I would say almost entirely without their input. And then they get to the moment where the creators realize, okay, we have a film that's really just, we forgot to film half the scenes. They're just missing. And when we assembled this film, it doesn't work. Also, it doesn't look or feel like Tank Girl. So that's the point where they bring it back to the creators and ask them to write the animated paints that go into the movie. I don't know if the animated pains
blew this. Work. Can you help?
Yeah. I don't know if the animated pains work here or not. I think
they
ultimately
fail. They fail.
Dude, I'm going to say that's up to the people who read the comic.
Cop out.
Yeah. It's kind of a cop out. Well, it's exactly what it is. It's people who forgot to film scenes, ran out of budget or whatever, and said, this doesn't look like Tank Girl. Please fix this for us. And at that point, you could even just blame the director, which I still think there's plenty of blame to go around for the director here. Don't get me wrong. But the producers come in even after the animation and they say, this is too confusing. So we get, once again, this has come up so many times on the show. I know this is something that you've now grown to love, Blade Runner syndrome.
Yeah.
Where you do a voiceover in the beginning to fix your film because the producers say it's too confusing. Now you just lobbied the complaint that this film is not subtle enough. The producers beg to differ with you. They think, hey, what year is this? What's going on with the, is there water or something? I don't understand. What
Who
happened
does Malcolm
is,
McDowell work for? Who's that guy in the coffin?
So they have Lori Petty, which to her credit and to the director's credit, they've both spoken out against this voiceover shit. They say this is, you know, just as bad as it is in Blade Runner. I mean, nobody likes this thing, but it's a thing the producers forced. And so we get probably something that doesn't help Lori Petty at all. Our first introduction to her is her incredibly bad voiceover. So yeah, I think this thing reeks of bad producers. Now I want to give you an alternate world as we move away from
an Tank alternate Girl. World from Tank Girl.
Tank Girl could have been produced and directed by a different team. And, okay. And you know that name.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say Steven Spielberg.
Steven Spielberg was set up to direct this. Can you believe that? And
no.
He passed on it.
No, he passed? Really?
Yeah. Yeah. I can't believe that either. But that moves us right into Schindler's List.
It does. Flawlessly.
Steven Spielberg, I want to give a lot of credit for Schindler's List. And, you know, we'll talk about this a little bit more
I
want to
take a lot of credit away from him, but I'll do it later.
Okay. Steven Spielberg... kind of came up with this idea. One of the actual survivors from the list came to him, you know, after convincing someone else to write a book and then try and, you know, turn the book into a film or whatever, gave him this idea. I always think back to The Aristocrats, the quote that George Carlin delivered to Penn Jillette upon coming up with the notion of, you know, doing The Aristocrats and making the kind of allusion to jazz and this brilliant idea that that film is based around. And he came to George Carlin and he's like, I got this pitch for The Aristocrats and this is such a great idea. And George Carlin just stone cold to him. I fucking love this guy. Just says, this is such a good idea. And you are too much of a fuck up to do this. Like, it's not fair that you got this idea. It sucks that this thing is now out there and that you have to be the one to do it because you came up with the idea. So Steven Spielberg felt that way about this film. He, you know, he made this thing and then he was like, oh, I'm not a good enough director for this. So he like tries to get Roman Polanski and stuff to do it. And Roman Polanski says, no, I can't handle a World War II film. And then makes The Pianist.
Yeah.
He tries to get a bunch of different directors to do this, but eventually does. Before we
Roman
get into
Polanski
casting.
He was going through some stuff at the time.
Before we get into casting, which I know you want to hit right away on this, I have to ask you, we've been doing these for an entire year now. what's up with you in World War II films?
Dude, you know,
this is like our fifth one or something.
Yeah, I know.
On this show.
And it's weird. Like,
where are these all coming from?
You know,
you got something you want to tell me?
I can
or?
Just chalk it up to body count.
Is that what it
like,
is for you?
You know, World
it's
War II.
It's the slasher World element
II,
inside.
World War II takes the cake over even Jason.
I realize it's a cultural thing, you know, because like I play a lot of first person shooters.
Yeah.
And World War II is like the oldest stereotypical cliche first person. Yeah. There's like three kinds of first person shooters, and World War II is two of those kinds.
Yeah. I mean, when you take something that I'm incredibly interested in, and it's weird because now I'm taking the I did a paper on serial killers joke down to a serious level.
Yeah, right.
Like when you take this element that is people can be these horrible like beasts, mm-hmm. World War II is where you go for that.
So that's the interest where the
I mean,
interest
yeah,
in that
like it's look at what so many people have found like made themselves capable of doing and furthermore justifying.
Right. Hmm.
And I don't know. I just think that's interesting, but we'll get back to that too.
First though, the cast.
Yeah.
You have Liam Neeson.
Yeah.
Now for me, Liam Neeson will always be Taken, despite that at this point, I still have not seen Taken.
Yeah.
I just think that the trailer for that is so uh-huh. amazingly awful
yeah.
and wonderful. And his voice in that is incredible.
Yeah.
Also, Batman Begins for me is
oh,
Liam
yeah,
Neeson.
He's in that
I don't
too.
Know the classic Liam Neeson stuff.
That's too bad. This
who
is
else
the classic
is,
Liam Neeson.
Is it? Is
yeah,
that what I'm being
it.
Exposed to now?
Yeah.
That's incredible. Why isn't he
I don't
more
know.
Stuff?
Like he,
for
he
me,
did
he's
this.
Like what Citizen Kane should have been in this mm-hmm. film. You know, there's a lot of
well,
that going on
it's,
here.
I think he takes the right director.
I don't, you know, I haven't seen enough of his stuff.
We also have, you have Ben Kingsley who plays the accountant Ishtok Stern. And
sure.
From the first time you see him, like Liam Neeson is probably the only example of the opposite to this, where you see him and you're like, oh my God, that's Liam Neeson.
Right.
You know, not,
right.
oh, there's an act. Like you see Ishtok Stern and you don't go, hey, Ben Kingsley. You go, oh, there's a Jewish accountant.
Right.
Like you don't even realize that they're actors by that point. And,
yeah.
and furthermore, like that's doubly appropriate for Ralph Fiennes because
yeah.
he plays Amon Gert.
Yeah.
And that's like not even an actor.
Yeah.
That's just fucking Amon Gert.
Like, yeah.
and Ralph Fiennes is he's a face that you recognize,
right.
especially recently.
Right.
And in this film, it's not even there. They're not actors anymore. They've become the characters. And maybe it's the black and white. Maybe
yeah.
it's just like the serious, really dry direction style.
Right.
The acting, those three specifically.
Yeah.
Is just incredible.
I think there's a couple things that go into it. You know, the black and white really is one of the things I think. You know, it's one of the things Spielberg wanted to do. And another reason that I guess we'll just probably sprinkle this throughout the entire show, why I'm actually really liking him after seeing this. This was something where the studio wanted him to film it on color stock so they could make, you know, for DVD release or whatever later. And he didn't want to bring color because he thought color would like glorify it. So he just refused to shoot this thing on color, which I think is great. But just in the way they do the sets. And like you say, it is, I hesitate to use the word bland because that sounds bad. But it is a really muted style. I guess that's much more artsy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's call it muted. And he's getting away from a lot of the big budget technique. You know, he did Jurassic Park before
mm-hmm.
this. You know what I mean? Jurassic Park for me is crane shots.
Yep.
When I think crane shot, I think Jurassic Park. And I don't know if that's for better or for worse, but Steven Spielberg for me is crane shots. And it's a lot of really big pullout stuff and huge, huge, huge sets that don't need to be built and the opposite of what I like about
mm-hmm.
filmmaking. And so I've kind of taken him to task for that stuff anytime we've talked about Spielberg before. But here he's doing something totally different. He films almost the entire thing like handheld,
yeah.
or what at least looks to me to be handheld.
Yeah.
I guess it could be
really,
really,
really personal.
Good. It's very intimate. It's very close up. A lot of it is kind of lingering in different rooms or different environments. You don't ever really, maybe a couple times.
Of the but camps and the...
As far as I can remember, you don't ever really even pull out too much to show the camp.
Uh-huh.
You know, even when you're moving through it, you know, I think back to Liquidation Day. They're kind of moving through each, you know, going by people
yeah.
and getting their conversations.
Right.
And kind of moving throughout the camp. At the time, I thought, here's Steven Spielberg going... What the fuck, Jews have it so bad?
Yeah.
Because we're watching all the
yeah.
conversations. But if I think about it as an alternative to a pullback fucking crane shot
yeah.
of, oh, look how big it is and how
yeah.
many Jews there were. You know what I mean? Jurassic
yeah.
Park.
Yep.
If it were a Jurassic Park shot instead, I wouldn't have liked that as much. But this is a lot more intimate.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like that about this style. I think to go back to what you were saying, that really helps with the characters.
Yeah.
Because you are in so close on them and you do have to believe their roles. There's a really great anecdote I found since we watched that about one of the list survivors coming to the set and actually meeting Ralph Fiennes and like trembling in fear because of how realistic he looked. So I think a lot of that does go to I don't even know if you'd say acting, because he probably wasn't acting the part at the time, but just makeup, wardrobe, you know, a lot of the stuff we kind of like ignore as right. we talk about films. I think they're really pulling their weight here.
Yeah, totally.
A couple just other little Spielberg things yeah. before we actually get into a lot of the meat of this. He thought about doing this subtitled, and we just watched a subtitled film. We saw yeah. Battle Royale.
Yeah.
And I, you know, a lot of people give me shit for this, but I think subtitled films are really overrated.
Totally.
And good. I'm glad you're on the same page here. The quote that came from him, and this is just another reason I'm really liking Spielberg on this one, is that to make it more authentic, he could have gone with German and Polish. But what he ultimately decided is that that would make it too easy. He said he thought that subtitles are too safe, mm-hmm. you know, because people are reading the subtitles and not paying attention to what's on screen. And I think so many people who are constantly giving, this is the point at which I get to attack all the people who can't defend themselves because right. I have a show and they don't.
Yeah.
I think you spend so much time reading subtitles, you don't pay attention to the visuals in the film, which a lot of time is, you know, make or break. You have to read the subtitles because you don't know what they're saying. I think a great exercise is to look at a film technically after you've already seen it or whatever, you understand the content of the film, and just, you know, without paying attention to what people are saying, just don't read the subtitles and just look at what's going on. Because when you spend all that time reading, you miss out on all the other parts of filmmaking. So I think it was a really good decision. It's another one of those things here where, I don't know, in a film where, again, a lot of my criticism comes from the fact that he's like, look how much these people suffered. Really, they did. And so much of it just seems like, hey, we're all Jews, aren't we, at the end of the day?
Yeah.
He could have made it subtitled to really even drive that home more. And he chose the better decision because he was like, well, I am making a film here and I want people to like fucking pay attention to it.
Mm-hmm.
To kind of play devil's advocate to that, though, we do have scenes like the last scene where everybody's kind of, it's showing all the real survivors and yeah, all the stuff with the rocks, which as I found out, it wasn't actually Spielberg with the rose at the end. It's Liam Neeson.
Oh, is it?
Which makes it a little better.
Yeah, a little better.
But to me, that stuff just reeked of like, how great am I for making this film?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. What does that end stuff do for you?
It feels like by the end of the film, Steven Spielberg's just patting himself on the back.
Yeah, a little bit.
It feels like by the end of the film, he's going, yeah, Oscar Schindler saved the Jews, but who made the fucking movie?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
like,
right.
I think I talked about the scene in The Office where like,
right.
where Michael makes Dwight laugh after Dwight like gives a really empowering speech. And Michael's like, so in a way, I gave that empowering speech.
Yeah, exactly.
Like that's the vibe I get from the end of the film. As Steven Spielberg's like, so basically I saved the Jews.
Yeah. Again, there's things I've kind of learned since watching the movie a couple of days ago, but I don't think it's fair to just keep going back to that stuff because right. I think if your viewers, you know, I've said that before on this, you can't expect people to go out and, you know, hunt. Read about,
yeah.
you can't expect everybody to listen to the DVD commentary and watch the featurettes and, you know, all that stuff.
Yep.
Not everyone's going to know these stories. So you have to worry about how your piece is going to affect people then and there. And even though I think, you know, moving through the town is a better alternative to the crane scenes yeah. and stuff at the end, you know, they worked with so many survivors from the list that halfway through filmmaking, they decided, hey, we should try and get as many as we can to appear at the end of the movie. I understand after working with all those people why you would want to include them in on this thing you're doing, because it is a powerful social thing you're trying to do. But as a film, I mean, that stuff is bad.
Yeah.
I don't just think it's bad craft, but I think it's selling the story short.
I agree. Totally agree. Basically what happens is you have this film, which I mean, you know, arguably is, no, not arguably, it's an incredible film. It's yeah, a sure. really good sure. film. And I mean, it's been praised, so I don't need to go into it being right. a great film. You have this really well thought out, you know, piece of art, and then it has a distinct definitive ending.
Right.
And then they open it up and they're like, but more importantly,
right.
these are the real people. You know, it's like, you make a film and then you make a documentary about Schindler.
Yeah.
And you're like, but the documentary, you know, that's more important.
Yeah. And that's absolutely the same thing I think is selling it short. You have this great performance by Liam Neeson the whole time. You know, when you have a film like that, you're trying to draw us into the character you're trying. And, you know, we've really taken a step back to talk about a lot of these things. I don't want to talk about a lot of the specific parts of it because they've been discussed ad nauseum everywhere. Sure. But I think looking at this uniquely as a film, in comparison to, for instance, a lot of the other stuff we've watched or just in the things it uses in comparison to, say, some of the other biopics or, you know, to look at something like Downfall, for instance.
Yeah.
This is an intimate retelling of Schindler's story. And Schindler as a character, his arc is fantastic. You know, he goes into this really having nothing. then he's all about business. And he, you know, the guy's a Nazi. I mean, that's what it is. At the end of the day, he's a Nazi. He doesn't give a shit about the Jews until certain key moments in the film that kind of make him change his mind. And that's the kind of story you want to tell in an epic film like this. I think that part of it is done beautifully. And by the time we get to the end, for me, it doesn't get a whole lot better than Liam Neeson being like, how many more people could I have saved?
Right. This car, this pen.
I'm sorry like, for as much as like, you know, on paper to me, I'm going to roll my eyes at that. Yeah. But man, he just fucking delivers that stuff.
Like, it's just, you have this like sad realization of this guy who is totally preoccupied with money,
right,
who then just starts using literally every penny he has to buy people's lives.
Yeah,
and then
pay
he's
people
like,
off.
And then he's stuck for the rest of his life seeing everything he owns and chalking it up to how many people that could have been.
I think in that one scene, that's the thing that finally, you know, just seals his character arc.
Yeah.
So many times when you watch a film, you have to kind of read into what the character arc is.
Well, you have to ask yourself questions.
Yeah, absolutely. And this, I think by the time you get to the end of this, this is really icing on the cake.
Yep.
It really solidifies what he went through here. And in a normal film where you kind of have these inklings of this is probably how I envision the character going through stuff, this really tells you that it affirms what you thought.
Yeah.
You know, it says, hey, you were right. This is actually, you know, what's going on in his head. And that stuff to me is really, really powerful. But when you tack on these kind of weird bookends, which I thought would open and close the film, but instead open the film and then go into the ending of the third act, all that stuff is really kind of confused to me. Also, I don't need the end shot of all the Jews being found.
Yeah.
I mean, I really thought this was kind of Schindler's story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, after all, we kind of open with him. I didn't really need that at the end, you know, but... those are all small details, I think, in comparison to the great things that this film actually did accomplish. Yeah. The other thing is, I mean, I just brought up Downfall, which is a film we did, you know, earlier this year that was really kind of all about
Hitler.
Seeing Hitler.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I keep seeing these great parody clips of that too, which are used. If you haven't seen Downfall, you've seen pieces of it used on YouTube for things.
Yep.
But Downfall was a film that was all about Hitler.
So you have a film that's about, you know, as you said, a Nazi who becomes a Nazi sympathizer who becomes, you know, completely against the party. But at the same time, pin is the pin. Like, it doesn't matter what you're actually believing. But you have this film and it's centered about World War II, but more focused on not even the Holocaust as much as just like the Jews and the ghetto and that whole like livelihood or lack thereof.
Right.
And you never once see like a war front. And you never once see or even really hear about Hitler.
Yeah.
It's just like, that's the war and Germany. That's like not what this is about. This is about, is like the German, like the Nazi that we're, there are two Nazis we're covering here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fucking Schindler and Gert.
Yeah.
And then Jews.
Yeah, that's it.
This is about the struggle of the Jews and how there were people helping and hurting them.
So Hitler's particular story is one that's just not in the film. It's one we just don't see. I think it's interesting to look at this film and kind of think about the stories that were included and that weren't. Because obviously you have so many personal stories. If you look at kind of the Roman Polanski way of doing this, that's to focus on people's individual stories.
Mm-hmm.
And here we're focusing really on Schindler's story and how that impacts people. So it's certainly a different method. But you don't, like you said, you don't see Hitler at all. I think it's really interesting to think about, you know, to use the People versus Larry Flint thing, the kind of parts of this film that were just time vaulted out of it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Where you just, you go, okay. And then they disappeared for 6 months and then they came back. The big one that stands out in my mind, there's little ones here and there, but the big one for me is once he starts up the factory after the weird mix up with the women and they come back from the camp and okay, everybody's in the factory, he's laid down the rules and you're like, wow, this is really where the bulk of the film must be. Mm-hmm. And you know, we're like 2.5 hours into it. So I'm like, wow, how the hell are they going to do this? Yeah. I thought maybe they'd end it with the factory starting or something, but they just go 6 months later.
Yeah.
How does that work?
Well, I mean,
is that okay to do?
The longer a film becomes, the more I'm, you know, going to be okay with a title card here or there.
Right.
And 2 hours and 45 minutes into a film is about the point where I'm like, yeah, I can go 6 months. Like, just show me 6 months. There are more creative ways, and we've discussed it. You know, we've kind of moved on from just tearing apart how to handle a montage.
Right.
And moved into how to handle all these other, like, horrible film cliches.
Right.
But I think in a film like this, I'm willing to grant it time card.
Yeah.
Just once.
Couldn't you end the film? Well, then I guess you can't have the great scene where he's judging the value. Yeah.
I think the thing is, like, this scene starts.
And you certainly don't want a montage of their 6 months there, right, and exactly. all the hilarious yeah. antics that ensued mm-hmm. while they were trying right. to yeah. not make these casings.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Maybe time card's okay. I don't know what device to use there. Yeah. I think the fact that we relied on a device is
time
kind
vault.
Of what, yeah. yeah. Time vault is kind of what upset me there. Well, even to look back at the infamous time vault from The People versus Larry Flint, that was kind of handled in a way where it was literally a time vault. Yep. And so you were like, well, that's kind of weird, but
yeah.
it was something new to the film. This was literally like you used the weird cards mm-hmm. to show that. They had the like weird people celebrate the Sabbath yeah. thing that comes back to the beginning. That stuff just all rubbed me the wrong way.
That's yeah.
It was a little too showy for me.
3 hour film, man. That's what you risk.
The one last thing that I wanted to ask you, and I made sure we handled this last because I don't want to like come off as sympathizing right. with Nazis uh-huh. or something. But the other thing that kind of bugs me in anytime you do a World War II film.
Totally.
And I think
almost anytime. Downfall excluded.
There's two types of portrayals yeah. of Nazis in film. And unfortunately, the one in Schindler's List is the one that kind of rubs me the wrong
yeah,
way.
Yeah, I agree.
In Downfall, we have Nazis as people.
Nazis are people too.
Yeah. yeah. That almost sounds too sympathetic.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the point I'm trying to convey. And in Schindler's List, we have Nazis as monsters.
Right.
As you said, you know, going into Schindler's List, one of the things that's really intriguing to you is the fact that real people can yeah. can grow to
that
do something
this actually
so,
happen.
Right. That's so awful like this. In kind of discovering the ways people do that, I kind of think about the fact that they're treating the Jews here like animals, like dogs.
Yeah.
Really. They're dehumanizing them. That's dealing with them as people, though.
Yeah.
That's Nazis are people, too. Because
yeah.
that's essentially really what happened, mm-hmm. right? I mean, you have cases where they were literally monsters, mm-hmm. but the difference I use is always to go to serial killers.
Yeah.
So often you have serial killers that are miswired or for whatever reason that yep. we could go on a whole nother show talking about. They feel the need to just kill people barbarically mm-hmm. without any rhyme or reason.
Yep.
I'm not saying this reason is justified at all. That's not the point right. I'm trying to make. The point I'm trying to make is that they've gotten in their head the actual, you know, real life Nazis. The way at which this was accomplished is they followed Hitler, who, although an awful man,
yeah.
was certainly, you know, historians will tell you, a charismatic uh-huh. leader, and somehow convinced people that Jews are animals.
Yeah, well,
that they're subhuman.
The big thing is that Hitler was under this impression that Jews were going to lead to the downfall of the German people.
Sure, right.
And I mean, with that in your head and then just, you know, a little sprinkling here and there of Jews aren't really people
right.
and maybe some bad science that can prove
sure,
that.
Yeah.
You just get to this. I mean, and Gert says it. Gert yeah. says it when he's talking to his maid, Helen.
Right.
He says, like, you know, you're human. Well, sort of, not right. really.
Yeah, yeah.
And you get this, that's kind of like this pang of realization that
right.
that the Nazis, even though like in everybody else's mind, they're genocide, you know,
right.
they're slaughtering yeah. a race of human beings.
Right.
And even in nowadays society, and this is a horrible thought experiment. I'm aware okay. of it. I don't fucking care.
Right.
Let's pretend.
Here on Double Feature.
Let's pretend. Everybody in the United States decides that dogs are going to be the downfall of society.
Okay.
Nobody would go for us slaughtering every dog.
Right.
So it's still wrong.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not trying to say it's right.
Right.
But if our options are slaughter every dog or slaughter every Jew, I can guarantee you almost every single human being on the planet will go for slaughter the dogs.
Well, right. It becomes a morality thing of
yeah.
which life is the more option, valuable.
And that's what they're weighing. They're weighing, do we
right.
let the German
right.
people falter and like wither out, like our namesake?
Right.
Or do we just erase this blemish of animals?
Right. So what you're saying is that's the way you think those people were convinced into
yeah.
doing that. That's how
yeah.
Nazis exist.
I mean,
I
you
would
just,
totally
you just,
agree with you.
You
on
just
that.
You just use manipulative logic, and as long as you can
right.
convince
right.
them of one false thing, the rest just becomes manipulative logic.
Right. And to come back to this film, the thing that bothers me here is this isn't really how the Nazis are portrayed.
Right.
Now, before we really, you know, step into that stuff, I can see this monster mentality in select cases.
Sure.
With Gert, for example.
Sure, yes.
Gert stands out there and he snipes. I mean, this is something he really did.
Uh-huh.
You know, he's just sniping off random people. I can understand if you have convinced a group of people, here the Nazis, that Jews are dogs. You have convinced them
yeah.
of that. And now you have, you know, trained these brainwashed people to go out and kill Jews. And among them, among this group of people, a select few are monsters
yeah. well,
who
they
are
just
drawn to it because of the
them.
Killing out.
Yeah.
Sure. Totally get that. And I think that's a fine mentality for crafting the film.
Sure.
But here we really just see, you know, I think back to the piano
scene. The piano scene. Yeah.
And we see them just going in and just as monsters, just exterminating these people and having fun with it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing that really gets me.
Everyone has fun with it. Yeah, every single one of them.
Is that they're all just having a blast.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't buy that.
No.
I really don't. Part of it for me, you know, and I've talked to you about this before, is just I'm a total humanist and
yeah.
I have a hard time believing this isn't even a thing that happened. I'm not a fucking Holocaust denier. I know it happened, but inside me, like my spirit just goes, God, how did this happen? And when you see it on film, they make it too easy. You know, Schindler's List just says, oh, well, it happened because these people are monsters.
Yeah.
Which I think is literally historically inaccurate.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, these people were brainwashed.
Yeah.
I don't think I think it's almost a little bit racist just to say all of these Germans are monsters.
Well, I mean,
in the way that the Germans are saying all of the Jews are
exactly.
monsters.
It's just reverse racism.
Yeah.
It's like,
well, I think the term reverse racism is also, that's just racism.
Whatever.
Right?
Point is like, it's, I mean, just in the subject change.
Okay, sure.
It's Steven Spielberg going, they thought we weren't people, those monsters.
Yes, that's exactly what you're getting here. And I don't think that's okay to do. However, that's an easy trap to fall into because what they did is certainly monstrous.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it's probably the worst thing that's ever happened in humanity.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an easy trap to fall into. So I can't really say what a poor filmmaker for falling for this.
No.
But I think it's one of those small bits of nuance that makes a film like Downfall incredible, where a film like Schindler's List really falls prey to that. Also, Nazis are dicks.
They're like, dicks.
Seriously.
Nazis and their tanks and their girls.
I want to ramble on a little bit more, but we have a website. It's doublefeatureshow.com. Also, the email address is doublefeatureshow@gmail.com. Let us know if you'll donate or if you think we just defended Nazis, feel free to.
Or if you think we just crossed the line putting these two films together.
Oh, yeah, that too. Yeah,
remember
this
how
whole
we
thing,
talked about Tank Girl earlier?
This whole thing was a horrible experiment. I'm not sure why we did this. There were tanks in both films.
That's true.
We're going to get
there weren't tanks in the other film.
No, you're right. We have a MySpace and a Facebook you can also get to from our website. And you should subscribe on iTunes if you're already doing that. If you found us on like Podcast Alley or something, go on iTunes, subscribe there. And leave us a review on iTunes because we like to read those. We really do like people's feedback. So they should actually like do that and send us stuff. We did it. We made it through a whole year of these shows.
God damn.
I don't want to get too self-congratulatory because that's what we're going to do next episode.
Yep.
But dude, a lot of podcasts don't make it through a year.
There we go.
I really enjoy doing this. I think this has been a generally good experiment.
Totally agree.
Well, your job's easy. You just show up and go, I totally agree. Yes, that is true.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
Thank you, Michael Bott. So what do we got coming up on this show?
Meaning next time?
Yeah, sure.
Next time, we're just going to talk about this year.
All right.
We're going to talk about, we're going to take back some things. We're going to instate some new opinions and we're going to ask ourselves why.
Yes.
And then we're going to just go right on into year number two, which will probably, it'll be a different ride.
Yeah. Year two will be different. So next week is going to be, because everyone's confused about this. Next week is recap show.
Yeah, double feature cliff notes.
It's not a clip show. We should be. This is not us just assembling other shows. Where I don't think we're going to use any clips.
Nope.
Unless they're really, really funny.
Or Rebecca Watson.
Or Rebecca Watson comes back.
Is that okay with you, Rebecca?
That is total bullshit.
I'm sorry. We're doing it anyway.
So the week immediately following next week will be the beginning of year two. We're not really sure what that's going to be yet. Hopefully we'll know next week.
Yeah.
But next week should be good. We're going to go over all that stuff. I think what we're going to try and do is not spoil any of those films.
That's fair.
We
should just talk about the films and our opinions of them, not the films in themselves.
All right. So we can go through a Cliff Notes, spoiler-free kind of what happened.
It'll be a yellow show.
Because this last year has been movies I own you haven't seen, movies you own I haven't seen. That's been what we've been doing every week. Although a lot of people don't know about that because we really haven't talked about it since the first show. Which is part of the reason we're changing that. So we've ended the grand experiment. We've seen almost every film that at the time the other hadn't seen. And we're going to figure that out. So if you haven't seen all of those movies,
watch more fucking film.
Bye.